You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Something's coming.
Stand by.
Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 99. I'm Sean DeRager, and with me, Brad Henderson.
Dude, I'm kind of nervous now, because now 100's next week.
Yeah, we don't know, and we still don't know what we're doing, because I'm going to be going to Hawaii. Not that I'm bragging. We'll try to buzz something out for that. But 100, yeah, we're gearing up on 100. That's crazy. Normally, podcasts have like this big, awesome show planned. Fuck that shit. Right?
We have a big, awesome show planned.
We have big, awesome shows every week. All right, this week we are going to be running down Brad's second half of South by Southwest. We'll also have some news with Josh Obershaw, but first, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
All right, Brad, you got home to a big stack of movies on your doorstep.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention it.
Were you able to watch any of them?
Actually, you know what? I was. A lot of stuff that I ordered. I'll probably post pictures just on Twitter because I actually had a lot of people, like even like a couple friends in Austin, DM me and was like, "Hey, man, what'd you get?" They just like did the trash pile. Well, like I had a bunch of stuff because I was gone for, I don't know, about a week and a half, and just every day is like Christmas at my house. It's stuff that I order, stuff that I get.
Yep.
So I'm always happy to come home after a trip, and plus I ordered actually a lot of shit, and so I'm happy to dive into it. But I'll get into that later on down the line. There's a few little surprises in there. However, I did get to a few things. I'll start with I was excited because I'm a big Carpenter fan, and I got the Village of the Damned Blu-ray from Scream Factory. This comes out in about 3 weeks. I've always enjoyed even Carpenter's, you know, more or less not so great films, and this is one of them. This movie's not so great. Upon watching it again after all these years, it's not very good. I don't know, this movie seems like watching it now, and because I haven't probably seen this movie in like I would say 10-15 years, it moves so fucking quickly, it's insane. Like it has a decent setup of, you know, the black mist that comes into the town. Everybody gets knocked out. Everybody wakes up. Everything's kind of fine. A few people lost their lives, of course, from accidents of just fainting. And then, you know, it turns out that ten women are pregnant in the town, and they all got pregnant at the same time. And they're all giving birth at the same time. Well, like, you find out they're pregnant, and then they all have big tummies, and then they're all having babies within, like, 3 minutes. It just moves entirely way too fast. And then the kids grow, and they're, like, 7 years old. And within, like, I would say a time frame of 15, 20 minutes, from what I remember when I was little, I thought that the kids grew really fast, but apparently not. It's just over a span of time. I don't know if the book or the old movie, and I think the book is called like House of the Cuckoos or something like that. And then, you know, of course there's the old film, but I always was under the impression that they grew really quickly. But it's not, that's not the case. It's just this movie, just from the time that the conception happens with the children and the ending, it's within 45 minutes and it just moves entirely way too fast. It feels like this should have been maybe a mini series to start and should have been like a 3-part, TV movie and been like 3-4 hours long. I don't know if I don't know if that would have been a good idea. Cause the movie's not that great, but I don't know. I tweeted out earlier because a few things I'm going to talk about the actual transfer and stuff is that one of our listeners, I think What Waylon Watches, Alan Dorich or something? I think it's Alan Dorich. He said he read an interview. I haven't looked it up yet, but he looked up an interview with Carpenter. It was basically just kind of a contract that he wanted to get over and done with. So he doesn't disown the movie. He's just very displeased with it.
Yeah. I guess in the interview he says he just wasn't passionate about it.
Right. And it's just, it's just really bizarre that like, cause it, at times it feels like a Carpenter film because of the cinematography at times. And then at other times the music feels very Carpenter-esque and it feels like a Carpenter movie, but all around this, aside from the obvious cameos by like Peter Jason and, a couple other, Bud, what's his name? His name not Bud. Is it Bud? Oh, he always plays a drunk in the movies. But anyways, aside from those little moments, it doesn't really feel like a Carpenter. It feels very much like a made for TV movie. And the transfer, it's just very pasty. It feels like you have your motion smoother on your television sometimes, and it's very awkward. And then I know in the beginning of the film, when the black mist thing is coming in the town, there's a hissing, but it's actually a hissing through the entire film. If you would cup your hand, do it if you're listening to the show, cup your hand and put it over your ear and listen, and then Hal kind of has that sound, it sounds like that through the entire fucking movie. And it's really aggravating. And it seems that it's only for like the dialogue and action sequences, because the music is very loud. It sounds good, the soundtrack and everything. But when the music isn't playing, it's just the dialogues, the characters talking. It's not like a lisp, like on their words, it's just like this ongoing like hissing sound.
It's not like that bad compression from like Body Bags, because that had some bad compression.
Yeah, but sound. Body Bags, like you get used to it.
Yeah, the S's and like, stuff like that are a bit compressed.
Yeah, but this is just like a constant, like it's not even like you could just be listening and it sounds like you have your hands over your ears, but you're cupping them.
Is this a new transfer? Did they say it's a new transfer?
No. Escape Factory do a new transfer.
sometimes they do. Like Escape from New York was apparently a new transfer. Mad Max is apparently a new transfer. And there were some people were either – it was hit or miss with certain people.
Yeah. But normally, it was like two out of their 200 releases.
If it's collector's edition, you'd think maybe they would do a new transfer, but apparently – No.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a collector's edition because of the interviews and the Hollow Grounds thing. But it's just – it's a shame that we're at a point where, Screen Factory's just dishing these things out, and they're not, looking at it. Like, all they care about is putting the film out there and making money. I'm sure – I complained last night. I was like, do they even test these out? I imagine they do. And they just I imagine it's just a shrug. Because honestly, I think that they are so concerned about the special features releasing the movie and being a Carpenter movie, they could give two fucks if the transfer's fucked up. And it's one of those things, we were given this. We only can work with what we're given. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. But – maybe it's time to look at other means, maybe trying to track down the actual print.
Right. So here, I got the scoop on what happened here. Basically, this was released in the UK by Fabulous Films, and that was massively DNR'd. So it seems like the master from Universal has some excessive DNR on it. So they just used the master they got from Universal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It makes sense because yep. that's...
So it's the same exactly. transfer. So if you have the UK... I don't know if it was Blu-ray or not that Fabulous Films put out. I'm not sure. But if you have that Blu-ray, the UK version, you're basically just upping... You're going to buy this and get some special features. It's the same transfer.
Yeah. So anyways, it's kind of a letdown, but honestly, it's not the greatest movie in the world, and I highly doubt I'll probably ever watch it again, or maybe years and years and years down the line. It's definitely probably my least favorite Carpenter film, I would say. So, but anyways,
cool.
Moving along, this was really fucking entertaining. I really enjoyed this, and I didn't know what to expect at first. It's called Extraordinary Tales. It's all animation. It's all these different stories, you know, kind of an anthology, all different types of animation from these filmmakers that retold post stories. But it actually has a surrounding story that Poe's actually a raven and he goes to this gravesite and he's being told these stories. But it's really good. It's actually has like Bela Lugosi. They have this old recording like of him doing that, reading like a Poe short story. So they use that and then overlaid it for the new animation that they did, which the animation was great, and just told this Poe story using Bela Lugosi's like reading from back in the day. And they say, you know, Christopher Lee did one. He did like the Fall House of Usher one. Guillermo del Toro did some stuff on this. Julian Sands, I think Corman was involved. So yeah, it was just, it's very interesting. I mean, it's traditional Poe story, so you kind of know how they're going to go, but I don't know. It's just really cool to see. And the animation's really odd too. It's really well done. All different types as well. You know, it's not the same director doing the exact same animation. So definitely pick it up. I don't even know who put this out. It's G Kids, but it's on Blu-ray. Like it looks like Cinedigm. How do you say that? I never. You're good at saying things. Cinedigm. They're the ones that distribute it, but yeah, it's out on Blu-ray, and dude, it's
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah,
is this region free or is this
Oh, this is region free. This came out over here. So
I looked it up on Amazon, and it says region. It says B region B.
No, it's a U.S. release. You know, it's on like Vudu and everything.
Oh, go home, Amazon. You're drunk.
Yeah, or maybe you just have the wrong. Region up, maybe.
No,
that could happen.
No, weird. Okay.
And next up, I finally got around to watching Stephen C. Miller's Extraction, starring
Bruce Willis needs extraction.
Kellen Lutz, Bruce Willis, Gina Carano, Dan Bilzerian from Instagram, and D.B. Sweeney.
Cast sounds amazing,
dude. I love Stephen C. Miller. I've pretty much loved all his films. But he's on this like action kick right now with Lionsgate doing these action movies. And I'm proud that he's getting the work. But man, I'm just not digging this movie at all. It's super generic. It's this device is made called Concord or something. I think it's called Concord. And it just basically... lights up the sky and lets you know where everybody is at all times. Wow, have we never seen that before in an action movie? Yes, we have. Thousands of times. And Bruce Willis is, you know, captured, and Kellen Lutz is trying to get in to the CIA, but he can't because he's just not good enough. But he has this opportunity to really work and try to get this stuff back because he knows all about how the software works. and he teams up with his ex-flame, Gina Carano, and they go after the bad guys. Dude, it's like there's nothing special about this film. Like, you can't even feel like it's a Stephen C. Miller film. It just feels like one of those generic action movies that comes out on Tuesday.
Which I think what Lionsgate does, and just kind of, because I follow Stephen on Twitter and you know, social media, and I know for this one, he was planning to do a different movie, and then he basically got tapped by Lionsgate to say, hey, you're doing this movie now. And it was an opportunity for him to work with Bruce Willis, and you know, so it's like, why wouldn't you take it? But I mean, he's basically assigned, you know, these films from Lionsgate.
But it feels like you would make an imprint and make it as your own. But like, it just doesn't feel like I actually.
Who knows what the scripts are for these?
What? Oh boy, bro time. Like when you, it's just the script is super duper weak with the dialogue with the characters. Just everything just falls flat. The word bro is used a few times. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just really weak. But one thing that kind of bothered me was, you know, I was watching the special features on here, and I was watching the interviews with the cast and crew, and they got to Steven, and like everything he says, he's like, you know, I wanted to make an action movie, so I showed everybody Nightcrawler and The Bourne Identity. And we wanted it to look like Nightcrawler and have action of The Bourne Identity. And that's the movie we made. Like, why don't you just fucking throw everything away and just do it yourself? Because, dude, like, look at how, like, Silent Night, Deadly Night looks. Silent Night. Fucking that looks amazing. Like, it looks like a really fucking good horror film. You know, and he has the talent. I really hope he doesn't get stuck as this contract director that can make a movie in 3 weeks and put it on the shelf in like 3 months. So I really hope it doesn't go down that route. But yeah, the movie's,
I think,
not.
Marauders is coming out next with that same lead.
Oh God, dude, it's going to be the same fucking movie. I have a feeling it will be. I hope not. Cause I really do like Steve. I love his movies. But I'm just not digging this, you know, thing he's doing right now. So, all right, next up, that's all that's on my doorstep. Next up, I have another whore box.
Oh.
So, or whore pack. Whoa. Sorry.
Whore pack.
I think whore box is
that's another thing. Company.
That's whore block is another thing. But anyways, this is whore pack. We briefly mentioned it on the last episode. So what we're going to have is we're going to be opening up the whore pack on the show, letting you guys know we're going to have monthly giveaways. Well, they hopefully monthly giveaways. That's still kind of going down the line. We want to have people really subscribe to this service because I think it's cool. It's kind of neat not knowing what you're going to get, even if you do get dupes, like I said last time. But anyways, I'm going to open this box. We're also going to have links in the future to sign up through our website to the horror pack. This is kind of a business thing, and we're going to get a little personal. But if you sign up, we actually get kind of revenue from that. And if we do, we're going to fucking pay our writers. So if you want us to pay our writers, we're not going to keep any of that money. Just saying. Sean, do you want to keep that in there, or do you want to edit that out? Is that a little too personal, Sean?
Is it?
I don't know.
I
like to be pretty personal on this.
I think it's fine.
I like to let people know what we're doing.
I think it's good to be transparent on the show.
Yeah, well, dude, like, we're not a fucking business, but I mean,
I pay so much money.
Yeah.
Out, you know, because of the show, because I buy so much stuff. I remember, like, you know, t-shirts and some mugs were sold, and those basically went to pay for my, you know, renewing the domain name and, you know, the site payment. So, I was grateful for that. And
all we want to do is we want to pay the people that do our, like, write for us.
Right.
Because Sean and I do the show and we do it for the love, but I mean, we ask a lot for people. That's the one thing we do. Whatever we do, we do on our own. It doesn't fucking matter. But we ask a lot. We ask Josh, hey, can you do this? Or I'll send him an email. Hey,
and you're demanding,
write about
man.
This.
And I'm demanding. Over the coals.
So I would like to actually, you know, start generating some type of revenue. And if you like the Whore Pack, sign up through us. If you like what you're hearing on the show that we're getting, that's exactly what you'll get. It's not like different each time they send the same Blu-rays out to everybody. So anyways, I'm going to open this shit up.
Speaking of that, I'm going to be working on a Patreon as well if you want to donate to the show that way. And like I said, we really want to, like we've said, we want to pay the writers of the site. That's number one on the agenda. So we'll be doing that if you guys want to get involved. I know people have been asking, but mainly we ask just support our sponsors. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. And we'll announce another sponsorship after we're done. Because I think we can go ahead and say safe bets in the bag.
Yep.
We're getting pretty big. I'm not going to lie.
We're going to be doing a affiliate link, right? You say that?
Something like that.
Hopefully it'll be in the show notes. We're working those out. We're working all that out.
All right. First, let me reach into the bag. Oh, Zombie Diaries 2, World of the Dead. All right. This is, I think this is one of these Dimension Extreme movies. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I haven't heard the greatest things, but I'm going to make up my own decision. But I do not own this, nor have I seen it. So, hey, that's a win-win, right?
Yeah.
Win-win? Win-win?
All right. If it's something you haven't seen, and
hey, it's something I haven't seen. So, all right.
Add it to the pile.
Next up. All right. This is actually pretty decent. I'm happy with this because I do not own this film, and I actually enjoy it. The Messengers with Kristen Stewart. This is written by Todd Farmer. This is one of his movies after he did Jason X. Not a terrible movie. I haven't seen it probably since its theatrical run. I think it had a sequel back in the day. Not too shabby. This is I think this is a Ghost House film too. I think Sam Raimi and
that's right.
Rob Tapert actually produced this. But yeah, I don't mind this. It's story by Todd Farmer, screenplay by Mark Whetton.
Now, how does that work? I always wonder how that stuff works.
This is how it works. There's different scenarios of how it could happen. All right, so I could be buddies with this director, and I pitch him an idea, and he really likes it, and I don't have a script, and he hires someone to write a script on my idea, and I get story by credit. I could write a script and submit it, and they really like it, but they don't like certain things, so they hire another writer to come in, and he changes a good percentage of it. I'll get story by credit. He gets screenplay
gotcha.
Credit. You know, very much like kind of, and it's not no shame because it's just how everything unfolds. You know, it's creative control. Sometimes scripts, like the name's completely off. Sometimes people ghostwrite scripts. I know Todd Farmer does that, and you know they're not allowed to say what they're ghostwriting on, but sometimes they'll take a whole script and rewrite the whole entire thing and not take a name on it at all. Shane Black did that for years, and didn't get fucking shit for it.
Do they get paid like here? We're gonna give you X amount of dollars.
Yeah,
to
they
write
get
the
paid
script.
Good money. They get paid good money.
They just don't get any points or whatever on the back end.
No, so if anything happens, like their name's not on it, they don't get credit if it becomes a big hit. Maybe Underbelly of Hollywood knows it happens, but you know, like one of those stories that Shane Black is responsible for the Predator script.
Right.
You know, he his payment was to be in the movie, and he would just have the ghost writer basically non-credit. So that's kind of how all that works. But anyways, The Messenger is actually a decent movie, so I'm really happy with that. I don't own that movie, so let's continue. Next up is Possession, not the Jeffrey Dean Morgan movie, but the one with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh.
I don't know if I've ever seen this, but I don't own it. What is this? This sounds so familiar. Mesmerizing thriller. Car accident.
I mean, I've seen the cover like countless times, and I've always skipped over it.
Can the man before actually be the man she lost? Oh, so it looks like... Oh, I have seen this. Yeah, it ends up like the last final moments is like at a cabin or some shit. I haven't watched it in a while. I don't remember if I liked it or not. So I will give it another shot. Why does it look like a ghost face? Is there ghosts in this? I thought it was kind of like a what's going on.
Because it was from the director of or the producers or executive producers of The Ring and The Grudge, and they marketed it that way. That's why it looks like a ghost face.
Oh. All right. Cool. So I have that one. Next up is, last but not least, Flatliners. That's a cool little addition. This is a Mill Creek title, and I actually don't own Flatliners on Blu-ray.
Flatliners is awesome.
Yeah, Flatliners is great. I actually do not own Flatliners on Blu-ray. I knew it was. It was always one of those things that was like $6.99, but
yeah.
It's Mill Creek, so you know it's always going to be $6.99. So yeah. Flatliners is pretty fucking cool. Joel Schumacher. I haven't watched it in a long time, so I'll be happy to.
It's fun, man. I mean, you're dealing with that. You know, people killing themselves to
bring them back.
I mean, it's like it's great. I mean, you know, Kiefer Sutherland, Julia Roberts, Kevin Bacon. I mean, come on, great cast.
All so got Flatliners, which is a solid purchase. Possession, which I will give another shot. The Messengers, which I'm pretty happy about. And I don't know about Zombie Diaries too, guys. This movie looks insane on the back. I hope it's just as goofy as it looks. the first one got a lot, like, got played at some festivals. So I was kind of curious, you know, it was kind of popular. So that's how I got the funding for the second one. So we'll give it a shot. So, again, you know, it's one of those things, if all these films were $5 at the shelf of Best Buy or Walmart, everybody would probably pick every title. So like I said again, or $6, that's right, $6, I would definitely do the horror pack, because I honestly do think it's worth it. I think it's fun not knowing what you're going to get, and it's fun watching some of these movies, because maybe it's like one of those things, like, you know, Possession. You've never seen Possession and you kind of didn't want to rent it, but now you have it for $6 and you can do with what you want. You could take them to sell them.
If you probably sell it for $5 or $6, it'd be good.
So I don't know. I think it's a cool service. I like not knowing what I'm going to get, and I don't own any of these films. So I think last time I owned two.
Yeah,
two of them. So, anyways,
right on.
I think it's cool. So yeah, definitely look into the horror pack. We'll be doing it. Probably monthly, and you'll see what I'm getting. And if you're liking that, then go ahead and sign up.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. My turn. I got a couple things. I am now keeping track of everything on the Letterboxd app.
Yay.
So I'm super excited, because I've been using another app to track all my movies I'm watching. And then I take that app, open up Letterboxd, put them in when I have a chance. Now I'm able to quickly log everything I'm watching as I'm watching it. Boom, 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 I'm done, which is fantastic. I only got a couple things. I watched Cop Car. And Brad, you talked about this a few weeks back.
Cop Car is like the best.
And it's really great. I love hearing, within the first 2 minutes, you got these two kids that are about, 13?
Yeah.
Younger than that?
Dude, those kids are probably portraying, I would be safe to say 8 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way they are teenagers.
Yeah, but I mean, we've covered the plot before.
Even in real life, I don't think those kids are teenagers.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But they're just trading off swear words back, trying to outgross each other out, which is a fantastic thing to open the film up with, because you know what you're getting. And Kevin Bacon is great. And like I said, you talked about it before, but I finally got around to watching it. And if you haven't seen this yet, check it out. I believe it's on Netflix, so you can easily see it. And it's a lot of fun. It twists and turns, so good to be surprised, I think. Next up, I don't want to talk about it too much, but because I think we're still trying to get Arrow to talk to Arrow, but I watched Black Mama, White Mama.
That's a good movie.
And this, I thought that I'd seen this one, but I've seen so many of these women in prison movies with Pam Grier. Like, what was the other one? Like Big Bird Cage or whatever, like those films.
Yeah.
Pam Grier's in it, and Sid Haig is in it. And I think he was in Big Bird Cage as well, one of those movies. But
yeah,
so I was getting him confused.
Black exploitation movies.
He is fantastic, and he plays like this kind of cowboyish type guy. And there's this scene where he wants these two. I mean, these are obviously filmed in the Philippines, so many of the actors are Filipino. And these two, I don't know if they're gangsters or whatever, but he goes, "We having a dick measuring contest? Whip them out!" And he makes the two guys at gunpoint whip out their dicks to see who has the bigger dick. And he's going to shoot the guy with the smaller dick. It's a fantastic scene.
I kind of forgot about that.
Oh my God!
I haven't seen that movie forever. I did get the Blu-ray. So, but I'm excited mean to
the basic plot, you know, women in prison. We got Pam Grier, and then the other actress. I don't know who's the other actress. I see a bunch of names and no faces, but and then a white woman, and they basically are forced by they're chained together,
white
and they're forced
woman.
they get out of prison, and they're going across these Filipino islands together. You know, of course, they hate each other at first. Type of film, but it's great. Sig Haig is great. It's pretty surprising. Like, the 70s were pretty all about the exploitation. I mean, there's a hot lesbian guard who has a hole in the wall of the shower. And just little touches like that are just fantastic. It's a lot of fun. My wife walked in when I was watching it. She was like, "What the hell are you watching?"
Yeah, but were you touching yourself?
Hell yes, especially during the shower scene. But it's pretty fantastic.
That's what I wanted to hear.
The Arrow release, is it out yet? Or is it coming out soon? I ordered it through Grindhouse releasing, so they basically send stuff out as soon as it's out. Let me see.
Yeah.
It comes out March 22nd. So it'll be out when you're hearing this. So,
yeah.
It's really great. I mean, if you're a fan of these women in prison and these kind of blaxploitation type films, there's both of those kind of weaved in, and it's just a lot of fun. I mean, Pam Grier should be the selling point anyway. So
yeah, I really hope that because I think it's directed by Eddie Romero.
Yeah,
he's done some did like Savage Sisters and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I think Savage Sisters is the one that I've seen.
Yeah, I think it's on a box set or whatever. But yeah, he's got a lot of like cool movies like late 60s and into the late 70s.
Yeah.
So hopefully that continues.
It's pretty great. I mean, it looks fantastic too. It's, you know, Arrow just did a great job with this release. And I haven't even dug into the special features, but I'm excited to. But more women in prison movies, please. I know that Shot Factory has they released like a 4-movie set or something.
Yeah. Who is the woman in that, by the way? I don't remember.
God, I'm trying to, you know.
I mean, she's freaking super pretty blonde.
Markov. Her last name's Markov, so.
Markov. I don't know who that is.
Margaret Markov.
I don't know. The name doesn't ring a bell.
It's great.
Oh, well.
It's great.
Yeah.
Ton of nudity, ton of action, and it's just, you know, exploitation film all the way around. So a lot of fun. And it has our favorite actor who basically, he recently passed away. I know he's a Filipino actor with a mustache, and he always plays like the rapey type, creepy guys in these movies. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
Peter Lorre or whatever?
Maybe.
I
know there's one where he plays like a kind of a rapey guard and I think it's Big Bird Cage, and they basically, at the end, tackle him down. Oh no! And he plays a gay guard.
Oh no!
And the women hold him down and rape him.
I was, It's so funny because I know who you're talking about. I was saying that as because Tarantino compared him to Peter Lorre? Lorre? But you're talking about Vic Diaz.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Vic Diaz, Tarantino compared him Peter? I can't remember. But anyways,
he's in Vampire Hookers, Raw Force. This dude was in everything. Savage Sisters.
Yeah, you know. Well, fun fact, I did some investigating on Vic Diaz for Vinegar Syndrome a few months ago. And trying to track him down because no one knows kind of what happened to him or when he died. Or who the remaining members of his family are. So I actually was, you know, looking very, very hard. Like I got hold of some public records and stuff like that. I could not find it. Finally, I remembered the director of his name's Mark something. He did a Electric Boogaloo, and then he did the Not Quite Hollywood documentary. Mm-hmm. So I actually contacted him, and he put me in contact with Vic Diaz's daughter that's alive. However, she did not want to be interviewed or talked to, but I did find out Vic Diaz died in about 2009, he died. But his wife and his kids are still alive. They're in healthy mode, so that's fine. But yeah, they're not really willing to talk about Vic Diaz at all, and there's not really any interviews with him or anything like that. So it kind of sucks that we're put into that predicament that we can't really get any interviews.
I mean, he almost deserves a documentary on his career because he's in so many films.
So the only people that could probably really speak about it would be Corman and. You know, maybe Jack Hill.
Probably.
He worked with Jack Hill a little bit. So.
Yeah. Cool. All right, I got one more. But that's a great release. So if you're into those movies, definitely grab that from Arrow. Grindhousevideo.com has it in stock. And I think they have a pretty decent price on it. I mean, I'm happy with it. All right. Finally, I got – I'm going to be writing a review of this this film, and then the previous film I talked about, the miniseries. I got a couple Mill Creek things in to review, and the first one was the Frankenstein miniseries, that Hallmark miniseries from like 2003, 2004, starring Luke Goss as the monster. And I talked about this a couple shows back. I actually kind of dug it, so it your mileage will vary depending on how many Frankenstein films you've seen and what you're expecting. This is more, I mean, if you think of it as like a Hallmark miniseries, that's probably about right, you know, but it looks pretty good, and I was actually liked the direction that they took it, being kind of closer to Mary Shelley's novel. But the other movie that I'm going to be putting a review up, I think, this week was 1985's My Science Project. So this one I hadn't seen in years, and of course I remember the cover, and it starred John Stockwell, Dennis Hopper's in it, and a bunch of other people, but directed by someone that I don't recognize the name, Jonathan Bitul, who did The Last Starfighter. He wrote The Last Starfighter, but then he directed Theodore Rex with Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, Jesus. That was probably his last movie.
It was. Yeah. So, I mean, not strong pedigree. I mean, the movie, I think, starts off strong. You know that it's right up there with, like, you know, it wants to be Back to the Future, and but it can't be influenced by it because they were at least released around the same time. But it wants to be that kind of, you know, 80s high school film with a bit of a sci-fi twist to it. And it starts off really strong. Like, the first half of the film is pretty great if you love these kind of 80s high school films. And John Stockwell's really, really fun, like really good as the lead. And Dennis Hopper is out there, as always, as like the science teacher. But then once shit starts going down, I mean, it's basically this kid he's kind of a slacker. He's a mechanic. Because, you know, most mechanics are just slackers in bad school. You know, that's what the 80s thought anyway. But he needs to do a science project. So he goes to an abandoned Air Force base where he finds something, and it turns out to be more than, you know, more than just a little piece of junk. It's possibly from aliens. So shit goes down, and when all that starts going down, it's where the movie starts to lose a little bit of steam. They basically are trapped in the high school, and different time periods are all colliding, and it makes up for some fun goofiness, but it's just kind of a little bit of a letdown, I think. I don't remember the ending at all, and so this is the movie that basically escaped my brain as soon as I saw it, and all I recognized was the cover, apparently.
Oh. I don't know if I've ever actually seen that movie. I haven't, yeah. But I don't know if I've.
It's a fun little nostalgic.
I saw it when I was little.
Yeah. I think I saw it when I was little. This would have been PG-13 if it came out now for sure, just because of the language and everything. But
it's not PG-13 already. Rated R?
PG.
Oh.
It's the 80s. 80s PG.
Oh. Okay.
So. But it was a fun little nostalgia thing. If you've seen it and you liked it, this is a bare bones disc. It looks pretty good. It's, you know, Mill Creek uses masters, HD masters, and you know it looks all right. It doesn't look horrible. It looks way better than anything I've ever seen on DVD of it, and it sounds all right. So it's like $6 or something like that, $6.99. So if you like the film, like, you know, it'd be a great little put. A great little purchase. I'll be writing up my thoughts a little more in depth on the website, but yeah, you know, my science project. Really funny, you know, there's a scene where there's a bunch of cops sitting around a table playing poker and drinking J&B, and it's just a really funny scene, because that's what most cops do on their time off, right?
Sound like you just knocked over some beer cans.
Soda can. But that's all I got on my doorstep.
Probably Coke Zero.
Coke Zero. Not endorsed by Coke Zero. But I'm drinking Coke Zero. I should have drank so much of it. All right. Well, we're going to be talking some South by Southwest here in a second. But first, let's jump into a little news segment with Josh Obershaw. Live from the news desk, Josh Obershaw joins us right now.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
It's going good, man. All right. So, not as heavy of a news week this week. Code Red seems to be slowing down a little bit with all of their crazy announcements. Although, I just saw one. Hold on one second. Breaking news. Summer sex comedy Hot Moves is the announcement.
Oh, wow. How did I miss that one?
It just, our friend Luis, or is it Luis? Apologize if I say it wrong. He's always like tweeting at us the Code Red announcement. So yep. I just saw that come through on my Twitter feed.
I'm pretty sure it's Luis.
Luis, I apologize. Yeah. But of course, if you listen to the show, you know that my first time saying a name is probably going to be off. But so that just came through. I'm sure we'll have more information when we get that story posted. But the thing with the Code Red things, like, he's just kind of blasting out these announcements. We don't know when they're going to be released. We have no clue. And they'll just end up either showing up on screenarchives.com, or he'll decide that he's going to keep them for himself and sell them through his own big cartel thing, which that shipping wise can be a nightmare. And if you ever order through the Code Red Big Cartel, here's what you do. You just place your order and you wait. And you do not ask him when it's coming. You don't say anything. You just wait for it to arrive. It'll take a couple weeks, but it'll get to you. That's the best way to order through them. Me, I just go to Screen Archives whenever he lists something, whenever it shows up there, and I buy what I want from there. Which is kind of frustrating because I want to get Cutthroats 9, and I think it's only available through his Big Cartel. So I've almost pulled the trigger a couple times, then I just kind of don't, and then he takes the store down. So anyway, that's a little pro tip for ordering from Code Red. I'm going to turn it over to you now, Josh. What's going on?
Well, speaking of Code Red, we were talking last week how, you know, they've been getting these really, really big titles all of a sudden. Well, they just got another one, and they announced that The House on the Edge of the Park is going to be another one of their Blu-ray releases, and I don't have much to report because, like you said earlier, there's no details whatsoever. It's just, hey, we're putting this out this year, and we'll let you know when we're ready. And I'm like, well, gee, thanks.
Yeah, I remember when he did that to about Shockma, and I think I waited a good year and a half for Shockma to arrive on Blu-ray. So, he'll be releasing them, just we don't know when. He's most likely still doing all the special features. He has people on interviews every now and then. So I don't know, but they'll show up. Like this, that's the one thing, like his announcements generally do happen eventually.
So I guess we'll just wait on that one. Until then, we got something that is actually coming out in the near future at Blue Underground. Sorry, I hear dogs. Anyway, Blue Underground is going to be releasing a double feature of Circus of Fear and Five Golden Dragons. These are two films that were made back in the 60s. These are two British films, and they're both based on the works of author Edgar Wallace. Circus of Fear stars Christopher Lee, Klaus Kinski, Susie Kendall, and Margaret Lee. Five Golden Dragons stars also Christopher Lee, Klaus Kinski, Margaret Lee, and Bob Cummings.
Oh, nice.
And that's going to be coming out June 28th. There's not a whole lot of features. Like Circus of Fear has a commentary with the director, a couple of trailers, and a poster and still gallery. Five Golden Dragons just has the trailers and the still gallery.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to these. Yeah, these types of double features are fun.
Oh, yeah, always. Definitely more bang for your buck when you consider how much Blu-rays cost to get them retail.
And Blue Underground's kind of on a roll, too. I mean, they're going to be releasing Venom and Manhattan Baby. So,
seriously.
Yeah, so there's going to be a good year for them.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one.
Manhattan Baby's been on a list for quite some time.
Oh, me too. And it's also one of those blind buys, too. I've never seen Manhattan Baby, but I've watched the trailer I don't know how many times, and I'm just waiting in anticipation for that one.
Yeah, I'm the same way. When anyone ever talks about Manhattan Baby, it just sells me over and over again. So,
well, one announcement that was posted earlier today is going to be from Mondo Macabro, who put out A Lizard in a Woman's Skin earlier. This one's called Private Vices, Public Virtues. It's from filmmaker Miklos Jankso. Now it's my turn to wonkily pronounce a name. This was a European filmmaker from back in the day. And this movie caused quite a bit of a scandal when it premiered at Cannes in 1976. And his career pretty much never recovered. It's gotten some home video releases, but none of them were any good. It was either bootleg or it's been censored versions. It's a piece of erotic cinema. Let me just put it to you that way. But that's coming out sometime in 2016. We don't know exactly when, and there are no features to report as of yet.
Okay, I'm pretty sure he's going to be working on some stuff. We talked to Pete about this a couple weeks ago, and he did mention it. And I know this is going to be a good one. This is going to have some features, I guarantee it, because it's such a great story about the film itself, you know, and the controversy that it caused. So I'm hoping for some really good interviews on this one. And this is like, you know, Vinegar Syndrome releases basically, you know, vintage porn, but this from Mondo Macabro, this is more, I guess, along the lines of kind of erotic art film, apparently.
Yeah.
So I'm very, you know, very interested in these types of things, not because of the sexy time, you know, these types of, it's a form of art, so it's very, it sounds very interesting to me, so.
Cool, and last year saw the Blu-ray release of an adventure film called The Land That Time Forgot. This was a movie that I remember seeing when I was a little kid, and it obviously went over so well, but The People That Time Forgot, which was the 1977 sequel, excuse me, that one's going to be coming out on Blu-ray May 24th, and it's got a few extras. There's an interview with star Sarah Douglas, who excuse me, a lot of people might remember from the first two Superman films. An interview with star Dana Gillespie, commentator with director Kevin Connor, who also directed The Land That Time Forgot, and a trailer. And yeah, that'll be out May 24th. Nice. So I'm definitely looking to pick both of these up in one fell swoop. I haven't seen these in so long.
Yeah, this is from Scorpion, and they're partnering with Kino Lorber. Did they put out Land That I Forgot? That was a Scorpion, or that was a Kino as well, wasn't it? I can't remember.
That was a Kino release. That was a Kino release.
So, great. That's fantastic. And it's directed by Kevin Connors. Where do I know him from? Was he the director of Motel Hell?
I believe you're right about that.
Because I think I just wrote I reviewed that Frankenstein film from 2003.
Oh, that's where I remember from. Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know that. I never even put the two together.
Yeah, so Kevin Connor, the director of Motel Hell, and most recently, you know, in 2003, the Frankenstein miniseries that I wrote the review on. So that's pretty incredible. I mean, if you look at his IMDb, he's pretty varied with his stuff.
I believe it now. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Kino Lorber and Scorpion are also teaming up for another Blu-ray. It's called Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. This stars Jodie Foster and Martin Sheen. This is from 1976, so this is early Jodie Foster. This is right around the same time as Taxi Driver. Nice. There's a couple of extras on here. A new interview with Martin Sheen, so looking forward to that. A commentary with director Nicholas Gessner. And also included is going to be a conversation between Sheen and Gessner. So Martin Sheen, Jodie Foster, sign me up. Nice. So this one's coming out May 10th. So keep your eyes open for that one if you're looking for any Martin Sheen that you've never seen.
Always. Kidding me?
And with that, that's all I got this week.
Awesome, Josh. Thank you very much. We will talk to you next. We're probably going to take a break from the news next week if we have a show. I'm going to Hawaii. Not bragging at all. And so we'll probably take a break from
the
news.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you when we see you. I'll probably have a lot more stuff to tell you about when we come back.
Yep. The news segment will probably be a little bit longer, but it should be good. All right, man. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. See you guys soon.
All right, Brad. So we need to talk about your second half of South by Southwest.
Yeah.
We covered the first half last week. And so what's up?
Well, I got sick. I got food poisoning. So that was a lot of fun. sucked pretty hard. I was not very happy about that. So I did miss out on a lot. However, I still got to see quite a few things and some things I can talk about. And some of my favorites were in the second half. So that night that I was going to, I think the last one I covered was War on Everyone. I was going to see My Father Die. I really, really enjoy this. This is by a first-time director who is actually Pierce Brosnan's son. And Pierce Brosnan actually was the, producer on this. It's a really, really, really gritty kind of exploitation revenge movie. It's shot beautifully. It's such a pretty film, but it's so fucking dirty and gross that it makes it even dirtier because you see every fucking thing. It's about this young brother who really looks up to his older brother and his older, they're just messing around, fucking around. They're backwoods, hillbillies, but it doesn't mean that they can't love one another. Brother is screwing around, the older brother, and his dad gets a little violent, punches him in the head, the little brother, causes him to lose his hearing, and then beats the older brother into basically submission to death, kills him. He goes to prison. Little boy continues about his life. He's older. He becomes an adult, a man, you know, late 20s, early 30s, finds out that his brother, his dad is getting out. So immediately he goes to kill him. And it is his kind of journey, also, you know, being deaf, his journey going to kill his father. And it gets really fucking violent, really messy. Very well done. The only thing that I was kind of taken back by in the film, and it has this, like, I can't really tell you what happens because it will give it away, but it has this, like, John Woo type of ending. And it's really fucking crazy. When you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. You're like, oh, that's a total John Woo ending. But definitely really excited to see that come out and see how it plays to the audience.
What was the name of that one more time?
My Father Die. So My okay. Father, comma, Die. Next up was a film I was not a fan of, so I won't kind of dwell on it too much. It was called The Arbalest. It was about a guy... looking, it was set like in the 80s, looking back at his toy career. It's set in the 70s. It's set in the 80s. He's looking back at the 70s of when he had this idea, quote unquote, for this toy. And it's actually the Rubik's Cube. So I'm not sure exactly what they're trying to do in the film, because the Rubik's Cube existed before that, to my knowledge. I never looked that up.
Wait, this isn't like a... It's like, does it take place in the present?
No, it's taking place like in 1986. But okay. He's telling a story to a news crew.
Oh, 1970s toy inventor.
Yeah, so... this guy creates the Rubik's Cube. He dies in this apartment. So him and this girl take the advantage of it and take the toy idea. And he becomes a millionaire. And it's about his story about how he's still obsessed over this girl and he wants to be with her. It's just a really odd movie because, like in the 80s, I mean, like I said, it's set in 1986. He pulls out a gun at one point, and everybody's like, what's that? And he's like, it's called a gun. And they're like, oh, what does it do? And he's like, and he explains how a gun works. And I'm like, I don't understand exactly what they're trying to achieve or what this means. Like, why doesn't this stuff exist? Like, There's no meaning behind it. It's mainly about his obsession with this woman. And that's pretty much it.
It won, like, the grand jury prize for South by Southwest.
Yeah, I have some words about that. I think that's all political, for sure.
What, awards aren't political at all? What are you talking about? What?
Yeah, a little political. I don't understand. There's a ton of, like, way better movies there than this. Next up was one of my favorites, my top five, for sure. It was called The Waiting. It stars James Caan, and it has the kid, the punk kid from Zombies Guide to the or Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, who's actually my favorite kid. He's just really funny. But it's about these two kids. One's a neighbor to this old man who's like Gran Torino, crotchety old man type shit, and he kind of has this just long past of being, you know, an asshole. So these kids want to do a social experiment, so they break into his house and set up these cameras and all these rigs to make him believe that his house is haunted. And it gets insane. It's so fucking good. It's kind of hard to talk about it because just everything that happens unfolds and opens another door to things that are happening in the movie. It is so good, though. It is it's very funny. It's very sad. It's very depressing. It's sometimes scary and jumpy at times. But it's a really, really good movie. So that's pretty much all I can say about it. Because you mention anything, it gives shit away. It's one of those type flicks. Nice. But definitely be waiting for it because it's really, really good. Next up was a film that I enjoyed for the most part. It's called The Trust. I did not expect to like this film as much as I did. It stars Nicolas Cage and Elijah Wood in a buddy cop movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw the trailer for this.
This, you would not think. Number one, Nicolas Cage just kind of went off the deep end because he does anything for a dollar. So he's in movies like every week. Elijah Wood, this is not his type of film. It's not his realm to be in anymore. You know, he's mostly a producer. He's in some kind of genre film. Him and Nicolas Cage have some of the best chemistry I've seen on screen in quite some time. Nicolas Cage is his boss. They're both cops. They're both kind of assholes. They're both lazy. But they stumble across this heist of a lifetime they can pull off and become millionaires, billionaires, whatever.
Of course.
So it's their story of getting shit together to knock off or basically rob this vault. But that's pretty much the story. However, it's just leading up to it. Nicolas Cage is doing what he used to do best, where he was a character and he was likable and he made you laugh and he was quirky. Right before Gone, he did this all up until about Gone in 60 Seconds, and then he kind of fell off.
He's had a few one-offs here and there, like Bad Lieutenant.
No.
No?
No, that's Cage Rage, man.
Is it Cage Rage?
Yeah. That movie's pure Cage Rage.
It's still fantastic.
I mean, he was in Joe. He did that.
But
he's trying to be a more serious actor. This is Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage, but actually doing a good job.
Nice.
You know, stuff of like, you know, Snake Eyes. I still think Snake Eyes is pretty much Cage's like best performance. But you know, he just nails everything. Elijah Wood is just kind of this, you know, laughing like this, just this young kid who doesn't really take too much stuff seriously, but they work together so well. And I don't know, man, I wanted to see an entire movie of just them being buddy cops, just fucking ragging on one another. But definitely something to look out for. It's a little bit more than kind of what it looks like. I haven't watched the trailer yet, but
the trailer's really, really funny. It gets the humor. The poster makes it look like a serious buddy cop film.
Oh God, dude, the poster's horrendous. Awful. But I'm glad the trailer makes it. So you get the laughs because, dude, it's really fucking funny.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy to see that come out. Next up, I got to see Ty West's new film. Before I speak about this, I'm a huge Ty West fan. The only film I have not enjoyed by Ty West is Triggerman. I love The Roost. I love his Cabin Fever 2, even though he disowns it and doesn't want to be associated with it. You know, The Innkeepers, The Sacrament, House of the Devil, not so much his VHS segment. But anyways, everything else that Ty West has done, I've been a huge fan of. So I was really excited to know that he is taking a break from horror and doing a Western, especially a Western starring Ethan Hawke. So I was on board 100%. However, this is such a juvenile and like it feels like a first attempt. And I think that by this time, Ty West is kind of an accomplished director in a way. You know, he's a genre director, so he understands genre, obviously, by some of the films he's in. And I was expecting, you know, this cool spaghetti Western, and it is a spaghetti Western. However, it's just very, like I said, juvenile. It's just very bland. You know, he wrote a script in kind of almost present day rather than writing a script as, you know, a spaghetti Western. You know, it stars Ethan Hawke. It's a Western John Wick is what it is. You know, a dog is harmed and Ethan Hawke goes after the people. It's very much a Western John Wick. It's kind of funny because the guy that plays the lead bad guy is a deputy. And it actually happens to be the guy from Sinister and Sinister 2, Deputy So-and-So. So he is actually kind of playing Deputy So-and-So.
That's funny.
And against Ethan Hawke. But there's like lines like dick liquor that are said in just a lot of like dick references. And it tries to be funny at times, like, you know, kind of slapsticky. And it just doesn't fit the movie at all. And when you're expecting it to be bigger and bigger and bigger, like it just never goes there. The opening, the fucking credit sequence is outstanding. But once actually Ethan Hawke meets these group of guys, it becomes just very bland. It happens right as when he wants to fight them, because he's like, he runs outside and he's like, oh boy, we're going to see a fight today. Come out here, mister. Let's go ahead and fight, you dick licker. And then like, the girl from Guardians of the Galaxy, Karen Gillan, something like that. The girl with all the blue shit. She comes out. She's like, oh my God, we gonna see a fight. Oh my God. Yeah. Let's see a fight. And I'm like, what is happening in this movie? Because I totally like read something else going into this. Like the feel of the film was different, but all of a sudden it just takes this dramatic turn and it just is 100% just goes downhill. It seems. And I was expecting when I was like, God, John Travolta's in this movie too. What is he going to be like? He actually isn't that bad. John Travolta plays, kind of the general, you know, he's the father of the deputy. Okay. So, I'm kind of anxious to see, because it seemed like it got a good response at South by Southwest, but it's one of those things where it's Ty West, so people are like really amped up to see it. I think most people are going to watch it and be like, damn, like that was really fucking bland.
Did you say the title of this?
Oh, I'm sorry. What an idiot. It's called In a Valley of Violence.
Okay.
Next up was another one of my favorites. It's called Beware the Slender Man. It's a documentary about Slender Man, of course, but it goes in this very invasive, chilling documentary about the two girls that lured their friend out in the woods and stabbed her 19 times.
Ugh, holy shit.
So I was expecting something else and got something completely different. This is up close and personal with the families of the girls, going through from when they were first born to the accounts of stabbing to now.
Wow.
There is interrogation, like a shit ton of interrogation footage of when hours after they stabbed their friend, watching them discuss of how they did it and what they did. These girls truly believed that Slender Man was going to come to them, hurt them, and kill their families. That's what these girls truly believed. And they were sacrificing their friend in order to please Slender Man.
How would these girls think that? Through like chat rooms or something like that? Or
so basically what it is, they got lost in the wormhole of the internet. Everybody that's been on an internet forum should know who Slender Man is. It's a very well-known quote-unquote urban legend at this point. It started on a forum called Something Awful as a Photoshop contest. This guy posted two photos and kind of altered them a little bit and just put this like little tagline at the bottom saying Slender Man. That guy was Eric Knutz something, K-N-U-D something. Well, anyways, he owns Slender Man, basically. He copywrote that shit when he realized it was kind of blowing up. It got very popular in Creepypasta, which that's kind of where the girls found it. Marble Hornets made some super fucking scary YouTube videos. But, I mean, you can get lost into a plethora of Slender Man shit online. Hmm. It's just out there. There's so many amateur videos, so many stagings. But the thing about what really bothered me about this documentary and about the girls is that, you know, you have Bigfoot, you have aliens, you have ghosts. They've been around for years and years and years, thousands of years. And stories dating back to, you know, the 1800s of numerous things. I mean, even the Egyptians were writing hieroglyphics of shit in the sky. And we can't ever date back to what it goes to. Nothing's been disproven. But Slender Man is obviously – you can type it on a Wikipedia and find out where Slender Man existed.
Yeah.
There is nothing leading up to it of like an abduction – of a guy in a white mask, and that became Slender Man. No, it's obviously made up 100%. So, and the thing is these girls, they're not stupid. They're very well educated. They're extremely well spoken. But they got lost in this wormhole of Slender Man and then really believe that these stories that people were writing on, you know, creepypasta and just online, that this would happen. So like I said, the doc goes into, you know, long interviews with the girls, leading up. I think they wrapped up, this movie in December. You know, the girls are still in kind of this, you know, limbo where you're not, I think one's been, sent to a psychiatric facility because she actually has schizophrenia. The other girl is just still being detained. You know, the parents only can see her every once in a while. They talk with her on the phone. You know, the girl didn't die that was stabbed, thankfully. Okay. You know, she's fully recovered. You know, so that's good. But there's actually a lot of other accounts of this stuff. This is just one story, and I'm kind of glad that the doc didn't go into all the different accounts, but there's a lot of accounts where kids are like, one kid tried to like stab her mother because of Slender Man. There's been some other accounts with other kids in other countries that have done things. So, you know, it's just not an isolated incident, and it's kind of crazy. So it makes you really wonder like what your kids are talking about with other kids. You know, is someone talking to my kid about stabbing another child? You know, of course, Willow would say, "Oh, my dad talks about Slender Man. That's funny." You know, but you know, it's one of those things that I think I'm very fortunate for making, you know, movies and writing movies and watching movies with Willow, because at such a young age, Willow was in one of my short films where I gouged at her eye, tore off her arm, disemboweled her. So she got to see behind the scenes. And then when she saw the movie, she was like, oh, wow, you know, that's how movies are done.
Yeah.
When we watch movies together, you know, she'll say, man, that's some really good special effects.
Nice.
Because she automatically knows. So I don't ever have that worry with her. But, man, I'm fucking terrified of other children.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not that kids are stupid. And that's the one thing I really enjoyed about the documentary. It's not biased.
Mm-hmm.
Because these little girls, they were 11 and 12, same age as my daughter. Children's brains aren't fully developed at this point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's hard for them to comprehend. So in a way, it's kind of hard to figure out the punishment for them, which I'm really glad that they interviewed the parents and got their side, because obviously you're going to love your child. You know, you're not going to disown them. I mean, some people would, but I mean, most parents are not going to disown their child for, you know, something of this nature, or, you know, worse or even less. So I really enjoyed the documentary for that. The only problem with the doc is that it's a little disorganized because it jumps back and forth with the history of Slender Man and then this incident. Personally, I thought they should have just had an info dump in the first, like, 15, 20 minutes of the film about Slender Man, how he existed, the videos, people posting videos online, and then got into it. But they, like, jump back and forth trying to make you jump, you know, images of Slender Man, people playing the Slender Man game online, stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's really good, though. It's a solid 2 hours, but, man, it's well worth every minute.
Cool. It's going to be on looks like HBO Buy.
Yeah, it's
gonna,
HBO documentary.
Okay, it'll be debuting later on this year. I don't have an exact date, but there's an article up here on Mashable.
Yeah, it's going to be – it'll be it'll be widely available.
Yeah.
I mean, this is nothing that's going to be hidden, because people are going to want to see it, because I think people are thinking it's going to be like a documentary about Slender Man. And I mean, it is. It really is. They do go into detail about how it was created and, you know, the pictures. And mm-hmm. It is pretty eerie at times. I like the urban legend. But, man, you know, it's kind of crazy that it's going to the point where, you know, you got to think that – some guy was at home on this, you know, something awful forum, and he saw this link. You got to think that the person that created the post for the Photoshop photo, that post in return did a butterfly effect that got a little girl stabbed 19 times.
Right.
That's a really that's a lot to take in. You know, you got to because it is a butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Of those types of things. It doesn't go into detail of that, but I always think about that. You know, like, man, if that guy never posted that photo, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Yeah. You know, we wouldn't be talking about this on the podcast right now.
Totally.
But anyways, next up is a movie called Pet. It's written by the guy that wrote the new Fantastic Four movie. Apparently, this was a Blacklist script. If you don't know what Blacklist is, Blacklist is a group of scripts that are the best unproduced scripts in Hollywood.
I don't buy that.
This shit should have stayed on the shelf.
I don't buy that Blacklist at all, because every time I see a movie that, oh, this is on the Blacklist, the movie was just pure crap. Like, wasn't Kevin Smith's Cop Out a Blacklist script? I think it's just the shittiest scripts in Hollywood, and they just kind of give it that name to just sell the movie.
It's funny, because we've had somebody on the show that has had their script on the Blacklist. So, anyways, it's not I did not like this movie whatsoever. It stars Dominic Mahogany, whatever his name is from Lost, and
one of the Hobbits.
Yeah, one of the Hobbits. It is a guy who obsesses over this girl, and he obsessed over, like, in high school. He has a job as kind of a guard and a guy that helps out at an animal shelter, or veterinarian, whatever. And he stumbles across her. He becomes obsessed with her, starts stalking her, like, on Facebook, Instagram, writing down everything she likes. And he keeps, you know, going to her and talking to her and acting like he really knows her, becomes obsessed with her, gets a cage from his animal shelter and stuffs her in a cage as a pet. Wow, how bro can we get? This is one of these white male, like, entitlement pieces of shit. I mean, this movie actually made me legitimately angry. There's a diner scene where they use the soundtrack to Drive. And when I hate it when movies do that. When I say soundtrack to Drive, they use three songs from Drive. In one scene.
The movie Kick-Ass used a track from the soundtrack of Sunshine.
No, he actually did that for the movie. It's different.
Okay, whatever.
He did. It bugs me too. It bugs me too. But he actually did that. He remixed it a little bit for that. But I agree with you. I agree with that. That always still bugs me. It's during the flashlight scene.
It takes me out of the movie.
Or the strobe. Yeah, it does. But I mean, this is, you know, this isn't, you know, this, like, score to Drive. This is, like, you know, then Kevin
Scott.
Oh,
songs. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
They used, I think it's like three songs.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, it's just not one. It's just not like, oh, I heard that in Drive. No, people are allowed to do this. This is like three consecutive songs. And it's like, what the fuck, man? So it gets a little original, because it turns the tables and kind of becomes like a Stockholm Syndrome type thing. But all in all, it's just a very bland movie. Fucking Dominic Mahogany is doing this.
I think,
like,
it's Dominic Monaghan.
I know. I don't like him. So I'm fucking up his name on purpose. So Dominic Mahogany, he does this voice through the film. It's like, I don't know what the fuck he's doing.
He doesn't do his Irish or Scottish accent.
No, he's doing something different, man. It's just, he's very whiny.
Oh, wow.
So anyways, it's just not a very good movie. I'm sorry if it doesn't have distribution. I'm shitting on it, but I did not like it. Next up is a Blumhouse flick. This premieres on Netflix. Netflix picked it up with associated with Blumhouse called Hush. It's Mike Flanagan's new film. He did Absentia and Oculus. This is his home invasion thriller about a killer stalking a deaf woman. I know there's like three movies with like deaf people at the festival. That's pretty much it. I was not the biggest fan of it because I felt it was a little predictable and kind of by the books, but I think a lot of people will enjoy this cat and mouse thriller. That's pretty much all I can say about it.
Okay.
Next up is Mickey Keating's Carnage Park. Mickey Keating did a movie called Pod, and he did a film called Darling. I'm a fan of Pod, and I'm a fan of Darling. I was really excited about Carnage Park. This stars Ashley Bell from The Last Exorcism. It has Alan Ruck as the sheriff, and it stars, basically, in the side, drum roll, Pat Healy as the psychotic sniper.
Oh, yeah.
Who wears a gas mask. It's all for effect, because if anybody's ever put on a gas mask, you can't see out of a sniper scope with a gas mask.
You need your eyes clear.
So, it like kept happening. I just was laughing. I like Mickey Keating. He's like 26 years old. He just wrapped up his fifth feature now. This is his fourth movie. The kids, you know, dishing movies out left and right. They're not bad movies. They're enjoyable. I think he's going places. Carnage Park's different. You know, it's because it's one thing's Pod is like the science fiction, you know, mumblecore movie. Then we had Darling, which is kind of his homage to like Repulsion. It's black and white, kind of psychological movie, and then he has Carnage Park, 1978 setting of these bank robbers that get set out in the desert with a psychotic sniper that's hunting him down. This is definitely his best looking film. I think he needs to calm down on kind of the strobe lights psycho shit that he's doing, because every once, like when shit gets hectic, he does this like flashy thing. He did it with Pod. He did it with Darling. He's doing Carnage Park. I think he needs to kind of pause for a second on that. I'm not enjoying that. Carnage Park's okay. You know, it's I was expecting a little bit more because this is his fourth film. It's enjoyable. Pat Healy's really great in it. Alan Ruck's great. Ashley Bell's great. Maybe I was just expecting a little bit more.
It got picked up by IFC Midnight, so it looks like Scream Factory will be releasing this.
Yeah, which is good, because that will get
distribution there.
Pretty wide release.
Which means it'll be on Netflix, too, so.
Yeah, so be able to be seen by everybody eventually. So there's that. And last but not least, the final film, which is my favorite of the festival.
Oh.
And will probably be in my top 10 of the year without doubt. Maybe my number one. I don't think anything is going to top this movie for the year. But it's Richard Linklater's spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused called Everybody Wants Some. This movie is absolutely perfect. It is very much like Dazed and Confused. However, the setting is different. This takes place in the 80s. It's set in August 1980, 3 days before classes start for a group of baseball guys, baseball team, that's living in houses next door to one another. The next 3 days they are together before classes start. They party every single day. And it's just about them and their shenanigans. And the trailer absolutely sucks for this movie, but it's hard to fit in the funny parts because it's all conversational pieces. It's all of kind of what happens.
Right. I think most of Linklater's films don't translate to trailers well, because I remember seeing a lot of his stuff. Like whenever I see a trailer of his stuff, I'm like, eh. And then I watch it and I'm like, wow, that's really fucking good, because his stuff is very conversational.
That's exactly what this is that it is fucking amazing. It is heartfelt. It is hysterical. It is perfect. It is, I don't know if I've actually had this much fun in a movie in quite some time, to the point where my face was hurting, that I was giddy afterwards, that I was on an all-time high after this movie. I still am, still thinking about it. Cool. Can't wait to see it many more times in the theaters. I'm going to take everybody I know. This does live up to Dazed and Confused. I think this is still going to have, I think this movie will have the legacy that Dazed and Confused, has. It's perfect in every way. And man, it's just so fucking funny. And it's such a buddy comedy. It's an 80s sex comedy too, which is perfect. It hits that note even. It hits that historic part, but it also hits that, just sexy teen movies that we had so much of. Just, man, the soundtrack is absolutely phenomenal. It's just a great movie, man. It's unbelievable that he strikes gold so many times, and especially with something like this, making something in the 70s and then making something set in the 80s. It's so good, man. But it's pretty much the wrap up for South by Southwest.
Awesome. And this is released, I think, goes wide on April 1st.
Yeah. It's released by Paramount, so it should come to your local theater.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, before we take off, we need to do our drawing for our horror pack. So the winner of this drawing gets to win a code. They can go and get a free horror pack.
Of the movies that we just mentioned.
Of those movies. Great. Fantastic.
This will be organized a little bit better, so when you get the code, you probably know what you're going to get.
As always, I tried to use Jog, and we only got like one response. Sorry, Derek Smith. I'm not gonna play it. I apologize. If we have more, it'll make it worthwhile. So, try to use the Jog thing. It's fun. I think it's awesome. I don't know. Apparently, people, our listeners, aren't a fan of that. But Derek was entered into the drawing. But we got a bunch of emails. I'm going to just get this drawing over with, and we will read the winners.
Winner.
The winner. Yeah, not the multiple winners. Yes, you can have talkies. Go leave me alone.
God, Willa loves talkies.
Frickin' talkies, man, these kids. I'm surprised they don't break them up and snort them up their nose.
While worshiping Slender Man.
Okay, go. Get out of here. Children.
Go to Slender Man.
All right, here we go. Where's my Boba Fett hat? Hold on.
Wow, Boba Fett.
Okay. Name has been drawn as the hat falls and paperwork falls everywhere. Okay. Ian Druk.
You are the winner.
Ian Druk. First time winner. First time writing in, I believe, as well. Let me pull up his email here. Ian says, I knew almost nothing about most of the films I saw at Fantastic Fest last year, but one I knew absolutely nothing about and ended up loving was Too Late. That's not
complete. Jesus Christ.
And he says, that's
best
not
the fucking movie ever.
He says, that's not completely true. I did know the name of the film and saw a set photo that showed John Hawks in a denim shirt and a lady standing next to a boxing ring. That still works. You only saw still. Too Late was my favorite movie of the fest. It had me laughing my dick off and crying my eyes out. I hope you grabbed your dick and got it put back on. The dialogue was fantastic, and there is a 20-minute scene in which a very sexy lady is bottomless the whole time. It's amazing.
Dude, it's
I hope to see you both at Fantastic Fest this year. You'll see Brad. Brad, are you going to Fantastic Fest?
Of course.
I will not be. Sorry, but it will happen soon.
Yeah, Too Late, I think, getting...
yeah, I can't.
It's finally going around to theaters now, dude. It's one of the most emotional movies I've seen in quite some time, and it's perfect.
Awesome. Ian, drop us a line. You can email readme@thescreamcast.com. Drop me a line there, and we'll get this code sent out to you. Congratulations. We encourage you guys to do these more often. So we're going to be having a couple drawings now per month. We're going to be doing our coffee. I actually have a couple movies that I'll be giving away the next couple months with the coffee. So we'll be doing our coffee drawing once a month. This month is a little bit different just because of everything that's been going on, but we'll do a drawing early next month for that. But these horror pack ones we'll be doing as well. So we'll be doing two drawings a month, and so you have more chance to win shit. But it'll be all interactive. Email us a story or whatever. As always with the coffee drawing, if you support any of our sponsors, we will enter your name into the hat, and you will be in the drawing for the coffee / extra goodie pack that we'll be doing drawings for. So, of course, go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. Our list of sponsors is there. If you ever buy anything from any of them, send us an email with a screen capture of the transaction, and we will enter your name into the hat for that drawing.
Mention right. The new sponsor, Sean.
Huh?
Mention our new sponsor. Oh,
yeah, new sponsor. So Horror Pack is a new sponsor. We'll be getting them on the site with our affiliate code. Also, we are now going to be pretty much, I guess, sponsored by Vinegar Syndrome.
Yes.
So we will be reviewing their monthly packs. We may be reviewing March and April around the same time next month. I'm not sure. I just got my shipment in for the March pack. So I want to give these a good once over before I before I talk about them. I think this is Brad just trying to get me to watch porn. I really think
success.
That's what's going on. So we'll be talking about those each month and giving our feedback of the films. Honest feedback. Just because they're a sponsor doesn't mean they are not going to be critiqued. We will give our honest opinions about the films. But, yeah.
Oh, dude, we're honest because fucking Pete called me out for my wife killer.
Yeah, that's right. But, yeah, the newest, the March pack. I think we talked about this. We got Infrasexum, Blue Ice, Sex World, and Pigs are that's my homework for the next couple weeks. So I should take that. I should take half of these to Hawaii with me.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. Like I said, go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. Check them out. Give everyone some love. CoffeeShopOfHorrors.com, of course. Use the code SCREAMCAST. You get 10% off your order. GrindhouseVideo.com. I need to talk to him. He will be donating either a code for a gift certificate code or a movie for the coffee drawing each month. And of course, Kevin Spencer. Check him out. Inkspatters.com. And Wolfman of Mars, who provide the music. Their new album is out. Go to wolfmenofmars.bandcamp.com and buy their music. Yeah, I can't talk. Buy their music. All right, is that everybody?
Yeah.
Yep. Oneofus.net, of course, for putting out our show each week, and also nerdly.co.uk for giving our show some love over there as well. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll talk to all of you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.